As we move deeper into the holiday season, we are once again facing a time that is full of contradictions. We are challenged with varying messages about the meaning of the season. Now, the usual expectation is a celebration of family and friends with both spiritual and secular joy and abundance. We face a barrage of advertising that promotes conspicuous consumption and calls to make donations to charities. We also hear about the many difficulties people struggle with at this time. I expect many of us find ourselves caught between celebration of the joys and concern for the sorrows of the season. Reverend Daniel Cantor of the First UU Congregation of Dallas writes, "Christmas and Hanukkah, once upon a time, were about struggle, hope, and freedom. Both stories are exile stories, pointing out how even a glimmer of light can provide a lasting hope for the triumph of all that is good." While we haven't altogether lost these themes in our modern interpretations, we have handed over a large portion of the narratives to the big box stores and advertisers bidding us a happy holiday. Now, these accounts once asked us to confront the evils of greed and the misuse of power and see in human efforts a desire for peace and justice. A sad American reality, and I would add Canadian, is that we have turned them into commercial bonanzas and hyped up reasons to shop. This loss eats at the self-worth of those who struggle to meet ends, and it corrodes our genetically ingrained shared values that what is good for all is good for each, and it cheapens the holiday season itself. The late Reverend Philip Hewitt also provides a Unitarian perspective on the holiday season. What is the Midwinter Festival for Unitarians? Certainly, they don't all see it in the same way. Some want to get as close to the traditional religious celebration of Christmas as they conscientiously can. Some want to stay outside all observances belonging to the Christian tradition and simply celebrate the solstice. Some find it difficult or impossible to celebrate at all. "I start getting depressed about the beginning of October about this whole matter of Christmas," wrote one Vancouver Unitarian. "The sight of tables laden with more food than the folk around them can possibly need, and then remembering those in real need, spoils the whole holiday." It is important that our celebration of the season should authentically express our own beliefs and lifestyle. Being a Unitarian has always entailed a greater or lesser degree of nonconformity, but not nonconformity simply for the sake of nonconformity. There is much in both the religious and the secular celebration of Christmas that most Unitarians can honestly and joyfully make their own. There is also much that most Unitarians will reject as inconsistent with what they want to be and to do, and for which they will seek more positive alternatives. In one way or another, Unitarians do participate in midwinter festivities. The seasonal services at our churches are among the best attended of the whole year. The holiday season gives rise to a whole host of problems for many in our society. Trying to provide the gifts, feasts, and parties that modern marketing calls us to offer can give rise to anxiety, depression, guilt, and other symptoms of poor mental health. As someone said to me recently, "Where's the compassion for the turkey?" Grief over loss, especially of loved ones, can be heightened at this time of year. Addictive behaviors, including food, alcohol, and other drugs, are easily accelerated. Existing mental health issues, poverty, homelessness, all seem to be compounded during this season. Social service agencies, health providers, emergency services, all face dramatically increased demand. And the current political and environmental situation in the world can only add to our concerns. This paradox of a period in which we look forward to the birth of new beginnings and a joyful future can be contrasted with existential despair. And this forces me at least, into a contemplative state. How can I cope with the contradictions? I need to be able to hold all sides of the equation in my heart and my mind, to be able to see things clearly and without illusion. The support of a community like ours, and possibly combined with a personal spiritual practice, is important to me and possibly for many of us. Now, this month's worship theme is compassion, the desire for oneself and all beings to be free of suffering, whether physical, emotional, or mental. Compassion is a key element in our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, as well as our second source, words and deeds of prophetic people which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Compassion is an essential element in this spiritual journey. And the Dalai Lama writes, "Just as compassion is the wish that all sentient beings be free of suffering, loving kindness is the wish that all may enjoy happiness." Loving kindness meditation is a means of cultivating, supporting, and strengthening compassion. And I would suggest that compassion by itself is not enough. I want to explore briefly the spiritual practice of loving kindness meditation that comes out of the Buddhist Theravadin tradition. Among the 40 classical meditations are the Brahmavihara, or divine abidings. Now, these four meditations are Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and Upekkha in Pali. And these can be translated as meditations on loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic or transcendental joy, and detachment or unitive equanimity. They flow out of each other and usually unfold in that order. And I would suggest that they offer a core spiritual practice, and one that is certainly relevant at this time of year. However, these meditations are important at any time of year. And they have been helpful to me personally, though I've never been consistent in practice, I have tried in my way to keep them in my mind and heart. Again, the Dalai Lama. Compassion is not religious business. It is human business. It is not luxury. It is essential for our own peace and mental stability. It is essential for human survival. Namgyo Rinpoche, who I have referred to in the past, offers some thoughts on the Brahmavihara. The meditation on metta is concerned with the development of an all-embracing friendliness rather than love of a sexual nature or falling in love. Some Eastern teachers have pointed out that metta is basically a very cool, passive state, somewhat like a basic feeling of ease. It is a state of wishing well to everyone you meet in the course of a day. The goal of the meditation on metta is to become equally friendly to all sentient beings. And from this point, you can go on to explore the two active qualities, karuna and mudita. In the exploration of your world, you will begin to notice that all beings go through strong emotional uprisings, the strongest of which is suffering. By identification with the suffering, one develops compassion. You cannot talk about compassion separate from a quality of calm and clarity, as well as an active application of skill and means. Feeling an identification with the suffering of others can't lead to effective action unless you are able to avoid being overwhelmed by the situation. Give support through loving words, a friendly greeting, or a small gift. It is always skillful not to be dramatic, not to have the big solution to everyone's problems, including your own. The Brahma-vihara that is largely neglected by Buddhists is mudita. This is usually rather awkwardly translated as sympathetic joy. I say awkwardly because for many people, the word sympathetic has connotations of illness or disaster. Whereas what is meant here is more like shared joy, being happy because somebody else is happy. This is the most important meditation, especially because many people seem to want to go overboard on compassion. If you only look for suffering, constantly only seeing and dealing with suffering, you begin to think that that is all there is. And soon there is no hope of anything else existing. In reality, the aim of compassion is to overcome suffering, to break through to joy. Whenever you appreciate another being, whenever you appreciate another being's happiness or someone's serene satisfaction at seeing something beautiful, there is a growing of the spirit in your being. This is an extremely important state, and by fostering it, you will develop much more quickly towards the enlightened understanding. From the motivation to good and the friendliness that develops through these first three of the four great meditations, you will become a well-wisher to all mankind. The great work consists of raising compassion to joy, and through this work, upekkha, or detachment, comes into being. Perhaps we might define this as holy indifference rather than detachment. Indifference with serenity. A better translation of upekkha could be equanimity, a state of serene, objective detachment and peacefulness. The best medicine for the alleviation of human suffering is to bring beings to a state of joy. When you perform compassionate acts, you bring about joy, and joy is of itself the most active of forces. It is a scattering of seeds. It is unfolding. With joy, many things can be accomplished very easily. It is hardly something you have to make an effort to practice, except for the effort of maintaining awareness, to notice joy in others and to enter into it. You can attain great strength through joy. Now, in a recent December 1st sermon, Reverend Sean Newton in Toronto offered some thoughts on compassion at this time of year as people struggle. He says, "There can be many reasons for this struggle, but I believe they all pretty much boil down to loss, to grief. Whatever the case, be mindful of those around you who struggle through this time of year. Reach out without judgment or expectation. Offer connection. Resist the impulse to fix. There's no real cure for grief. There is only patience and presence. So let us be generous with both. And in all of this, for all of us, because we can sometimes be far too subtle with our affections, be on the lookout for love. Hold yourself open to connection. Try to notice someone trying to reach out to you. Though there are countless ways through this season, let ours be the way of patience and gentleness, the way of intention and attention, the way of change and evolution. So there are many small things we can do that are compassionate. Give a thoughtful gift. Help a person in need. Plant seeds of kindness. Help an animal. Sometimes the gift we should give to help others starts with us. Loving kindness meditation allows you to create positive change within yourself of friendliness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity. This meditation focuses on sending loving thoughts, starting for yourself, and then extending gradually to all sentient beings. There's a condensed form of the meditation could go as follows. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness that is sorrowless. May all beings be free of attachment and aversion and abide in serene equanimity with all that is. You can find another version of this meditation in reading 595 and Singing the Living Tradition. I think that my issue, both personally and in this religious community, and I hope the challenge for all of us, is to be able to enjoy the promise of the season without losing sight of the problems. Can we be kind and compassionate to ourselves and to others? In the words of Ram Dass, I would like my life to be a statement of love and compassion. And where it isn't, that is where my work lies. Within and without our congregation, there are people who are dealing with complex issues. There may be many who are facing difficulties we are not aware of. Let us all be thinking of how we can support others who may need it. And if we need support ourselves, may we be able to ask for that support. May we all be here for each other and continue to nurture our relationships with loving kindness, compassion, and joy, not only during this holiday season, but through the year ahead. And may we find the space to rest in quiet peacefulness and equanimity during this busy time of year. I'm going to close with this reading, Each Breath, by Reverend Leif Seligman. We'll follow that with a period of quiet, contemplation, prayer, meditation. I'll then close the quiet time with a chime and we can move into community reflections. We pause in the stillness to rest for a moment, to quiet ourselves so that we can feel what stirs within us. Each breath draws us closer to the pulse of life, and with each exhalation, we make room for something new. May we find in this gathering the comfort of those who care. May we encounter patience along our growing edges, and compassion in our most tender spots. Here may we find the inspiration and encouragement we need to face our challenges and nurture ourselves. And in the presence of suffering across the globe, may we redouble our efforts to practice kindness where we are, with the hope that the light of our actions travels like the light of faraway stars. May our gestures of compassion and generosity seed possibility. May we walk humbly with one another, choosing reconciliation over resentment as we try to live right-sized. When life presses in and shifts us off balance, when pain assails us, when frustration mounts, may the rhythm of our breath steady us and bring us back to a place of gratitude. May it be so.